So we are holding, well, today should by rights be Ayin Dalet, but we're actually still holding on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. I have so much stuff to tell and not enough time to tell it, so I'll have to try to condense it a little. All right, let's get started here. We're holding on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, three lines from the bottom. The third of Rabbi Baba Chana's story. Omer Rabba, and here it just says Rabba. There's another Girsa Rabba Baba Chana, in which case it's continuation of the same series of stories. Lididi Chazili Hurmin Bar Lilis. He says, I saw Hurmin Bar Lilis. The Rashbam says is a shed. In fact, actually, the Rashbam says the Girsa, his father's Girsa was Hurmin, as we have it in the Gemara over here. He heard from his Rebbeim and said it's Hurmiz. You have it in a number of places. For example, you have the name Ifra Hurmiz, the famous queen in the Gemara. Rashi mentions in a few places that it means she had the beauty of shading. So over here, so it's Hurmin or Hurmiz is the case.
Nice.
I don't know, it's like an unearthly beauty, I guess. Okay. Anyway, the Didi Chazi Hurmin Bar Lili. I saw this Hurmin or Hurmiz Bar Lilis is a shed. Pikaroi takufya deshura de mechoza. He was running along the projections of the wall of mechoza. The projections, like they have, like the wall of the old city, the things that go up and down. Yeah, this is in mechoza. What I'm saying, they have the same kind of hello. They have the same kind of thing on their city wall. Hello. Okay. Welcome. We just got started. So Rabbi Bahana was saying that I saw Hurmin Bar Lilis, a shed, who was running along the projections of the wall of Mechuzah. The Rohit Parsha, there was a horseman running along. The Rashbam says he didn't even know that the shed is up there on the wall. He's just running along on his horse, not knowing what's going on over there. The Rohit Parsha Kirochit Chevot in the Katoi. Down below on the ground, there was a guy running along. There was a guy racing along on his horse along the ground next to the wall. Below Yochile, but he couldn't catch up to him. So the Rashbam explains, it's not that
the horseman,
he wasn't. That's the thing. The Rashbam says he wasn't deliberately chasing him. He Bechal didn't even know he exists.
Going fast.
That he's Sam going fast, but even so, the shed is.
Hurmin
Bar Lilis was running faster than this horseman. So he's a shed and running on foot, but he's still going faster than a horseman down below.
Wow.
Yeah. Continues the Gemara with the story. Zimnechada havamet sargon le tauti kud naisi. One time, the same Hurmin or Hurmiz Bar Lilis, this shed, had two mules saddled for him. V'kaiman atrei gishri deroignag. The two mules were parked by the two sides. Dishri literally means the bridges, but I guess it means the banks of Roygnag, which is the name of a river. So it's far apart, it's a wide river, but you have the two mules saddled, one on one side and one on the other side. The Shavar Mehai Lahai and Mehai Lahai, and this Hurmin Malilis is jumping back and forth from one mule to the other and managing to make it back and forth. He was holding two cups of wine, two full cups of wine in his hand. And as he's jumping around over there, he's spilling the wine, he's pouring the wine from one cup to the other and back and forth, like juggling them. And not a drop of it spills on the ground.
And
that was a very stormy day. It was a day like described in Tillim.
Another Masechta? Because I remember the story. Maybe I just...
No, you're thinking maybe of in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, you do have Hurmiz and Ahurmiz over there. That's the Rashbam brings it over here as one of the proofs that Hurmin or Hurmiz is the name of a shed. But yeah.
I remember the juggling the wine story.
If you've ever read the Juggler and the King, which is an adaptation of the Vilna Gaon's explanation of these agatis by Rav Aaron Feldman, then yeah, you'll come across it. Okay. Anyway, that day was a very stormy day when like everything was going up to the sky and going down to the depth. So in other words, the point is, even though it was so stormy, he was still able to continue his jumping and his juggling and his pouring wine back and forth without anything dripping out. Ad the shamu b'machos of a katluru until they heard about it in the king's palace and killed it.
Yeah.
Which king? The Rashbam says two possibilities. One is it means the king of the shading. Shadim are not usually supposed to show off their powers in front of people. So like this, he's showing it off. He's telling, giving away all their secrets. So therefore, they kill him. The other explanation that Ashbam says is the king we mean over here is a human king. This Hurman Balilis, according to this, was not a full-fledged Shed. He was actually, we call him over here Hurman Balilis, implying his mother was Lilith, the famous female Shed. His father was a human being. Therefore, he's half human, half Shed. And therefore, the king is nervous of him. Such a guy with those kinds of powers, like we're describing over here, could end up overthrowing the kingdom. And therefore they execute him. Yeah.
Good job.
He was jumping like so quickly from one
side. Because he was half human. I don't know. Yeah, somehow they tricked him. I don't know. Okay. So, what's going on over here? So, let's start with, again, as we usually do, start with Marsha. He says like this. Like the Rashbam said, Hurmin or Hurmiz is a Shed. Here he represents, he's one of the agents of the Yetzirah. The wall of Mechuzah was a city of Jews in Babel. The wall can represent one of two things. It can represent the Torah, or it can represent the Jewish people. Either way, the Yetzirah is always on the attack against the Torah and against us. In fact, there's a Gemara in Sukkah that says that even though, I mean, you have billions of Goyim out there in the world, but the Yetzirah preferentially goes and tries to attack the Jewish people, because he knows that's where the main thing lies.
It's clear.
Yeah. Okay. So he's running along the battlements, along the projections of the wall, which are the weakest part of a wall. So what's in Torah, what's the weakest part? The weakest in our thought is the chukim. We know the famous thing. Rashi mentions, for example, that the Sutton and the Umat Ha'olam always make fun. Haitach, and you keep illogical mitzvahs like Shatnez and Parah Adumah and Basa B'Cholav and what have you. So he tries to attack those. And if we're talking about if the war means the Jewish people, then it means, unfortunately, you have people with weak emunah. So the Yetzirah and his agents go after them. Meanwhile, though, you have, while Hurman Bar Lilith is running along the wall and trying to attack the wall, meanwhile, at the bottom, you have that horseman running along over there. That horseman represents the tzaddikim, who are racing to do mitzvahs, and who they're riding on their animal. They tame their nefesh abahamis and use it like you're supposed to. So therefore, they prevent Hurman. So the Marsha understands. Now, we said in the Gemara of Eloyachilay that he couldn't catch up to him. We understood it. The Rashbam understood it to mean that it means that the horseman couldn't keep up with Hurman. Marsha takes it the other way around. Hurman can't keep up with the horseman because the horseman, the tzaddik, prevents the Yetzirah from accomplishing.
That's what I was asking, because it's ambiguous.
It is ambiguous, so therefore it's meant to be understood either way.
It doesn't make sense if you're saying the horseman was running after Balilus.
No, according to, so not like the Rashbam said that the horseman didn't know that Hurman is there. According to Marsha's explanation, the horseman very much knows that he's there. He knows that Hurman is racing along there and trying to do us harm, and the tzaddik is running to do mitzvahs and prevent the Yetzirah from accomplishing what he wants to accomplish. So eventually, the Yetzirah realizes, okay, I'm not getting anywhere with the Jewish people. The tzaddikim are always standing in my way. Or, you know, to put it in kids' terms, those of us who grew up on the Mashiach times, you know, the Shvai is always defeating the Yetzirah and his minions. So, so blessed Breira, he figures, fine, I'll go after the good.
And by the way, Sus is half, Shame Sag is half Gematria of Sus, which is the bearer of Bond goes to Sag.
Okay.
And the Semach Tzedek is my morning.
So
the horse is represented by Bami. It's being tamed by Shem Sag.
Okay. All right. Onward. So Hurman finally gives up and decides, you know what, fine, I'll go race on the goy. They're represented by mules. Mules are an illegitimate creature. But they're puzzles. The famous Rashi that says in Vayishlach by one of the descendants of Esav over there that he's a puzzle and he brought Sulim into the world. Doesn't say Mashiach's going to ride on a donkey. Says Mashiach will ride on a donkey, not a mule. We're talking about mules.
Mules are half donkey, half horse.
Yeah.
Donkeys also are mixed breed.
No, they're not. A donkey is a purebred animal. Okay. Mules are illegitimate. They're half horse, half donkey. There's a Rashi in Vayishlach over there by one of the descendants of Seir that says that he himself was a apostle, he himself was a mamzer, and he brought mules into the world because he's the first to crossbreed them. Okay, so who are these two mules then? They represent, the Marsha says they represent, you find in Sefer Daniel, in his Nevuahs about the future, that there's going to be two nations that are always at odds with each other. You're always going to have two powers that are rivals to each other. A few, you know, if we were learning this 30 years ago, we would have said it's the United States and the Soviet Union. I guess nowadays also you could say it's the United States and Russia. You could say it's the Western world versus the Arabs. You could say whatever. There's always going to be two nations that are at loggerheads like that. And they're saddled, meaning they're ready for war with each other. So what does Hormin do? He's jumping from one to the other. Sometimes one of them is victorious. Sometimes the other goes back and forth. What's the two cups of wine? In many places in Tanakh, we find that the punishment, the Eibishter is going to punish the goyim, la'asid lover, is compared to a bitter cup of wine, which they're going to end up drinking and then drinking down to the dregs. So therefore, it means that even up until that time, when the Eibishter finally judges the nations and then gives out those cups of punishment, those two powers that we're talking about will still exist, and they'll still be rivals. They'll still be rivals with each other all the way till that time. So when we say that not a drop spills from one cup to the other, represents the idea they're going to drink every bit of it. We should finish off that day. Because the wine is, it makes them drunk, it makes them stagger around, whatever, all over. And it's one of the reasons, by the way. It is one of the reasons, by the way, why we pour the Kodesh Shel Eliyahu before we say Shemei Chamotcha by the Seder, is to represent that Kodesh Shel Choronos that the Eibishter is gonna give them. Yeah. Okay. So then we say Yalu Shemayim Yehuda Tehomet. So comes the point that it's going up to the heavens and down to the earth. That refers to Lost and Love. It refers to Yemos Mashiach, as the Pasuk says, that there'll be Shemayim Chadoshim V'Oretz Chadosha. The heavens and the earth will be new.
But the Rambam says we don't know, really.
Yeah, but never the Pasuk describes it in those terms, whether it means literally, whether it means metaphorically or whatever. That's a whole different question, but whatever. The Pasuk does describe it in those terms. And then finally, what happens? The king hears about it and kills him. That's talking about the lost in love. The Gemara tells us in Sukkah that Eibishter is going to take the Yetzirah and shecht him in front of the Tzaddikim.
Yay.
And that's the end of that. Okay.
Eat him?
No. Well, that's the Leviathan. There is an explanation, actually, that the Leviathan has to do with this also. We'll get to that in the next couple of blocks when we talk about the Leviathan. Okay. Here's another explanation. This one comes from the Vilna Gaon. He says that, again, Hormiz, we said, is a shed. Specifically, he says, based on a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that you have, the Gemara says over there, there's Hormiz or Hormin and Ahormiz. Ahormiz is the Persian name for the Eibishter. Hormin is like the forces of Tumah, the shed or whatever, as we described him. So therefore, a person who is Hormiz by Lilith is a person who's completely given over to Tumah, completely given over to Klippus. What does it mean? We're talking about a Yid. Who even he learns Torah, but even the Torah he learns is not L'shem Shemayim. It's for his own personal honor. So we're saying Hormin Bar Lilith over here represents a person, a Yid, who acts that way, who acts in a way, he acts like there's nothing of the Eibishter, there's nothing of Kedusha in him. Even the Torah he learns is only in order to make himself proud for his gaiva or whatever. Yeah. So he runs along the wall of Mechuzah. Mechuzah is a place where we find elsewhere in the Gemara, in Rosh Hashanah, that says that the people over there learned Torah but not Lishma. So therefore, it's a perfect place for him to run along. He finds it a very congenial place. Uh-huh. Meanwhile, you have a rider on a horse.
They were very rich there.
They were very rich there. They were very spoiled. Yeah, and they learned Shalei Lishma.
And Rava
brought his yeshiva over there in order to improve the situation there. But that it's not the only one. I mean, we find, for example, the Gemara in Chulin that mentions the people of Pompidissa were also very corrupt, and they brought the yeshiva and established it over there, because that's what you do. You bring a place of Torah to a place like that where the people are corrupt and whatever in order to raise up.
That's why we're in New York.
Yeah. Okay. Onward. We say you have the rider on the horse. With the rider on the horse, that again represents the tzaddik. It represents somebody who really does learn Torah Lishma. But over here in the Vilna Gaon's explanation, lo yochel le means the same as Rashbam, that the horseman can't keep up with Hormin. Why not? Because first, Hormin has nothing to oppose him. He's all yetzahara. His yetzatov, his nefesh elikis is like the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, is makif all of milamayla, so it doesn't really interfere with anything that he does. Where the horseman down below, he first has a nefesh of Ahmed opposing him. So therefore, he can't keep up. There's only so much he can do. Meanwhile, going back to Hormin, so it's a Hormin or Hormiz then, he has his mules. And the Vilna Gaon's Girsa, a number of other Rishonim and Acharonim also have the Girsa that the name of the river is not Roignag, but Doinag. Doinag means wax. Horim kadoinag namasim ulifne Hashem. There's a number of places in Tanakh where it represents the idea that wax is a symbol of like something that seems very solid, but it melts as soon as the Eibishter appears. And therefore, and then it also talks about in Tanya, I think in Perek Chavdalah or something, that it represents the forces of Tumah, which melt away as soon as there's Kedusha over there. So therefore, this guy has mules, which are sterile. They don't give birth to offspring, just like his Torah and his accomplishments aren't going to bring about anything useful. He's by a river of wax, which is it looks solid, but it's just going to melt away. He jumps back and forth between he's after Taiba, and then after a while he gets tired of that and starts looking for Covered, and goes back and forth between Covered and Taiba. He's pouring his wine over there, and not a drop spills because he's not thinking. He's not even giving a thought at any time. You know what? What's going to be after 120?
Where is he pouring the wine?
He's pouring his wine back and forth. In other words, he's pouring from first I'm going to be all into Taiba, then I'm going to be all into Covered, and back and forth, but not a drop spills, in the sense like he never thinks, you know what, is there something higher that I should be living for? Until eventually Shama Bemauka, they're here in the king's palace and up in Shemayim, it's time for him, and the Kapluhu, and unfortunately he's a goner.
No more wine.
Yeah. Couple of other another thing from a sefer called Emes L'Yaakov by the Gaon of Lissa. He says he doesn't explain the whole details, but he says that the person we're talking about, but he who jumps back and forth, is a person who does tshuva, but then he keeps on falling back into his bad habits. So every time he does tshuva and absorbs a lot of kedusha, then he falls back into what he was doing before, and it all ends up being taken over by tumah again. So in other words, the point is, a person has to be careful when they do tshuva. Shouldn't be echdav ashu. Shouldn't be that you're going to do tshuva and then you're just going to fall back into what you were doing before. Yeah.
So you learn how to not do
echshav. So you have to. I mean, Al-Tanabe writes in Tanya and he gives a tshuva that even if a person ends up. So he doesn't go into all those details, but the point is, a person has to be careful to not be like Hurman in that sense. Once you did tshuva, stick to it. Don't fall back.
Right. So the moral of the story is, no matter how good you are at doing tshuva, if you fall back, you'll be killed by the king.
Well,
maybe
something. No. Okay. All right. Then there was another explanation in the Sefer Pele Yoyis that goes into the idea that, again, this person is learning Torah Shaloi Lishma. Meanwhile, you have the guy riding on the horse. Besides what you were mentioning about the horse being twice stag, there's also, it talks about in Torah Ur, that horses also represent the letters of Torah. So the horseman is down below because he's learning Torah with a nivus like he should. Meanwhile, Hurman is running or is racing along over there because he's learning Torah Shaloi Lishma with Geiger. Torah Ur says that. Loibig Vura Chasus Yachbats, when the Pasuk says, means that it talks about, in other words, that it's not just the letters of Torah, but not just the Gvura of it, the Eibishter wants that there should be Av of a year with it.
So the
man on the horse represents the person who's learning Torah, but he's learning Torah down below, feeling humble like he should be. Meanwhile, Hurman is jumping from far. Well, that's right. Meanwhile, you have Hurman is jumping from one side of the river to the other, very far apart. Really, it should be, when you learn Torah, the idea is you're trying to unite. You're trying to unite the two parts of Torah, Torah Shebasav, Torah Shebapeh. You're trying to unite all the courses of the world. This guy thinks of them as two separate things. None of his wine spills, in the sense he's not even mashpia anything to the world, because he's learning Torah all for his own gaiva. Eventually, what happens, though, what does it mean, Shama Bemalka B'Katluhu, in a more positive sense, that it's not the person himself, like in the Vilna Gaon's explanation, who gets killed and what's going to happen to him after 120, the Koyach HaTuma over here gets killed. Meanwhile, the guy was for learning Torah. It was Shaloi Lishma, but it was words of Torah after all. So that Tuma gets killed, and therefore the Torah is recaptured back into Kedusha where it belongs. The horseman, the tzaddik, is now able to recapture, to be Milo that back to Kedusha where it belongs.
But why do we take someone who learns Torah not Lishma and saying like it's worse than someone who doesn't learn Torah? That's what we seem to
say. We're not saying necessarily that he's worse than someone who's not learning Torah at all, but on the other hand, learning Torah Shaloi Lishma, you know what, I'll tell you. So you have the famous thing that you should learn Shaloi Lishma, Mitev Shaloi Lishma, Baal Lishma. On the other hand, you have Gemaras that say that a person who learns Torah Shaloi Lishma is a really bad thing. Tosfos explains someplace, I think in Erevin, I don't remember, that maybe in Sochim, that what it is when we say, when we talk about it's a bad thing, we mean when a person is Loimit Torah Amanas Lakanter, in order to use it to shtech everybody else. Look how great I am. Look what a nothing you are. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about. That's the kind of thing we're talking about in this story.
Sure, it's not good. But who says that it's worse than not learning?
We're not saying that. each in its own way. I mean, it means you're taking Torah, which is Chochmoso, Ritzon, Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're using it for a really negative purpose like that. So that's the point that the Chassidus Shavuot, the Pele Yoris, is saying over here, is it's not to say that, I mean, the Torah is Torah. There is Kedusha over there. There is Kedusha over there. It can be recaptured back for and rise up to the Eibishter. But you need somebody. You need this horseman who now becomes a king to be able to work on that, to be able to elevate that. You have, for example, you have a famous story from the Friedrich Rebbe, for example, long story involving a guy from Prague who was a brilliant Talmud Chacham, but he went off the derech. He became an apikoros. He's living for many years as a rasha until his nephew comes and with a shlichus from Rabbi Eliyahu Baal Shem or something and helps him do tshuva. What happens with all the Torah he learned all those years in Tumah? Ultimately, somebody has to go and elevate it to Kedusha. So many years later, like 100-odd years later, the Baal Shem Tov sends one of his talmidim to a certain forest, which is where this guy used to live, and has him learn 4 Prakim of Mishnayos over there, and thereby elevate all the Torah that this guy, Rav Moshe, learned all those years.
Only
in, 4
Prakim did it.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing we're talking about over here. Okay, next story. Omer Rabba, or Rabba Baba.
Was not much, so much 4 Prakim of Mishnayos then.
But when you learn it Lashma, when you learn it the way it's
one for each Eilam.
Maybe, I don't know. Okay.
That's my period.
Okay, onward. Rabba says, I saw an Urzila, which is a baby Re'im, Bar Yoyme, which was a day old, it was just born that day, to have a Har Tover. This Urzila, this baby Re'im, was as big as Har Tover. By the way, the Gemara in Zvachim also brings this story in a different context to discuss the question how the Re'imim survived the marble. If even a baby Re'im is so big, how did they survive the marble? And the Gemara talks about over there that they tied it to the teva, and like maybe it's just swimming along next to the teva, or whatever. When we get to Zvachim in a year and a half, as the Shem will learn that. But anyway, okay. The how tover, so which means, by the way, it means that at least on some level, these stories have to be describing something in the Gashmiistic world. And like I was saying yesterday, many of the Meforshim do say that some of them, at least, do describe. The Rashbam, for example, says that some of these stories are meant to describe the giant creatures that are described in Sefer Yoh. This is one of them. Okay.
Now, what is it exactly?
So it's a baby re'im, bar yoyme, a day old. What a re'im is, there's many different opinions in and of itself. You have people have identified it as the rhinoceros and as the buffalo and as the oryx and I don't know what else. Anyway, whatever, some kind of animal with very large horns in particular.
Nice one.
Yeah.
The dinosaur.
Yeah.
A rex.
Not a T-Rex because those didn't have horns, but yeah, one of my boys suggested maybe a Triceratops. Yeah, okay, to have a Kahar Tover was as big as Har Tover. A Har Tover Kamahavi, how big is Har Tover? Abra Paris. Yeah, that's true. The rain is supposed to be a kosher animal. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. The Har Tover Kamahavi, Abra Paris. How big is Har Tover? 4 parsa. There is a girsa that is in Yaakov and in a number of them Farshim, not 4 but 40 parsa. We'll talk about both of those as we go through. Umashocha the tzavore tlosa parsi. The length of its neck was 3 parsa. Obey marbata dereshe, and the space where it needs to lay down its head is parso palga, is 1.5 parsa. Romakufsa, this gigantic day old creature, let out some waste. The sachala, the yardina, and stopped up the yardin. It blocked up the yardin until the Rashbam explains. Eventually, it dissolved away, and the yardin started flowing normally again. Okay, explanation. Let's start with the Ritva has it as explanations on a number of these. Agatis. He didn't have on the previous two, at least not that I saw. This is the first one he seems to have. He says we're talking about over here. The Gemara is representing over here in a mashal a religion. The Pashtus, I guess, either Christianity or Islam, that grew very, very quickly to a huge size, like a day old and already it's this gigantic creature. And eventually, what did it do? It dammed up the Yarden with its weight, in the sense it took the pure ideals of Yiddishkeit and distorted them and dirtied them and made them into something filthy and disgusting. So that's.
But eventually
the Yarden still continues to flow.
The sizes, for example.
He doesn't explain the details of the sizes. some of the Mephoshim say that in these things, the ikar is the main point of the mashal. The details are maybe just perhaps to give it color, sort of, like to make the mashal more real to us or whatever. Not necessarily, the ritva, for example, might say that the details of the mashal are not necessarily meant to be significant.
The details of the mashal are
not
that
mustard. Oh, nevertheless, though, okay.
Unless it's mustard seed.
Yeah, okay.
That is very important.
Yeah. Okay.
You missed that.
Okay, next we have Marsha. He says that the baby Re'em over here represents Yoshua. What Moshe Rabbeinu says in his bracha to Shevet Ephraim, which is the Shevet of Yeshua, but Karnei Re'em Karnav, his horns like the horns of a Re'em. So therefore, the Moshe was describing the career of Yeshua. He's a day old in the sense that, and already a giant creature, but he starts out right at the beginning. Yeshua is no sooner leader than he's already defeating 31 kings of Eretz Canaan. What's one of the
first day on the job?
Yeah, almost. What's one of the most famous things we associate with Yeshua is the famous thing that he stopped the sun. He stopped
yeah.
the sun. Now that's at the end. That's at the end. How long when he stopped the sun? How long did it stand still? There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that has a number of different opinions. 12 hours or 24 hours. The maximum opinion over there is with Shmuel ben Achmeni, who says that it was 48 hours. Now let's calculate. We know, as we mentioned yesterday, Mahalachot and Benedi by Yom Asara Parsois, an average person can walk 10 parsa in a day in a daytime period of 12 hours. Therefore 48 hours equal 40 parsa. That's the 40 parsa of our Gemara. And why is it compared to Har Tava? Because just like Har Tava is visible from very far away in Eretz Yisrael, this nest is visible from very far all over the world. Everybody could see the sun stop. It made Yeshua and the Jewish people famous all over the world. Next, the neck is 3 parsa. That represents the size of the camp of the Jewish people that Yeshua led. The camp of the Jewish people was 12 by 12 mil, 3 by 3 parsa. Or also, he says, it can also represent the size of your shalayim. We'll learn towards the end of the Agadah over here an inyan about your shalayim being associated with Gimel with 3 parsa. If the camp is 3 by 3 parsa, the part that specifically Yeshua, like the head, where his head rests, where he goes to bed every night, let's say, is the area from the edge of the machne until the middle, 1.5 parsa. That's the 1.5 parsa of the Gemara. And when we finish off that he dammed up the Yarden, that is the net of splitting the Yarden. Then the Vilna Goyen goes almost the other way around. He says that Marsha is making the Urzila into a positive thing, Yeshua. The Ritva made it into a negative thing, one of these enemy religions. The Vilna Gaon also makes it into a negative thing. This Urzila over here is, he says, as a beginner Talmud Chacham. So he's only a day old. He's only starting out. He thinks he already has, he imagines he already has horns, like a Re'em, that he's ready to go fight and be mefalfel and join into the deep discussions. So he's like Har Tover. What's one thing we associate with Har Tover? The famous thing is it's one of the mountains that came to try to have the Torah received on it. And Abishah said, no good, you're a Baal Geis, which is exactly what this guy is. Yeah. Meanwhile, he imagines himself that he's 40 parsa in size, like in the sense he's already accomplished what a person should normally accomplish in 40 years of life, from 30 to 70. His neck is 3 parsa long because his head is in the clouds. He imagines of the clouds later on, the Gemara is going to say, are 3 parsa above the ground. So he imagines like he's already reaching up to the clouds.
Much bigger than Moshe Rabbeinu.
What do we mean that his head is 1.5 parsa in size? Means really, who is such a guy? Really, he belongs to the Eir of Rav. The Eir of Rav weren't kept in the Machna, they had to stay outside. Imagine a person from the Eir of Rav wants to go talk with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu lives in the middle of the Machna, right outside the Mishkan. A guy from the Eir of Rav would have to walk a parasa and a half, halfway across the full size of the Machna to reach Moshe. That's what this guy is. What happens in the end? He's going, imagining himself as great Talmud Chacham. Everybody should be giving me covered. Meanwhile, nobody is. So eventually he figures, okay, well then if I can't get anywhere on my own merits, fine, I'll bashmutz all the other Talmud Chachamim. He lets out waste and dams up the Yarden, figuring, okay, well then once everybody figures all of them are no good next, then they'll start respecting me. But as the Rashbam says, it crumbles away, it melts away, and that's it. The Yarden continues flowing and he's left where he is. Then there are, I have a few other ones over here, and I really would like to say all of them, except we really don't have time, but I'll tell one more, which is, on the other hand, a positive one, and one which actually I talk about a lot of times, I have reason to mention a lot of times in this year, so I think it bears telling. This comes from the Sefer Rabduni Batachochin. I've mentioned a number of times, you know, you have sometimes people who are not able to come to the shiur all the time. They come maybe once in a great while, and I always mention in that connection the Gemara and Chagiga about Bar Bei Rav Dechad Yoyma, somebody who has to maybe be traveling on the road for a long time in order to be in a yeshiva one day, and that's a mile. So he says that's what our story over here is describing. You have an Ur Zila, he has the Ur of Torah. Meanwhile, people think of him as Zila, like he's a mezalzel on him. They think he's a mezalzel on him. They think he's a nothing because he's only a day old. He only comes to the yeshiva one day every few months or whatever. Really, actually, what does it mean that we describe him as Har Tover? To say Har Tover came to try and have the Torah placed on it, given on it, and the Gemara says, as a matter of fact, because of that, the Gemara in Megillah makes Tavachomer from that. The Gemara says that originally Har Tover and Har Carmel, those two mountains that came to have the Torah received on them, the Ebeshah didn't accept their claims. Nevertheless, their schus was that they became established in Eretz Yisrael. Har Tover and Har Carmel are both in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara makes a kavachomer from that. Madoch them, that they only wanted to have the Torah given on them, they end up in Eretz Yisrael. The Botik, Nisias, and Botim Midrashis, and Kutlo, that's where we learn Torah. Alach of Kamavakama, that lasted lover, they will wind up in Eretz Yisrael. This guy. They're on the west side of the Yarden. They're in Eretz Yisrael proper. Har Tover. Har Tover is in the middle of, is in the north central Eretz Yisrael, yeah. And Har Carmel is by the sea over there, by Haifa. So this guy is like that also. Right now, he's only a Tover. He's coming, attempting to learn Torah, but his chus is that he will eventually be established over there. He's described as 40 parsa because, again, another kavachomer we can make. We know the Meraglim traveled for 40 days throughout Israel, and the result of that was that the Yidden ended up spending 40 years in the desert. Midah Tova Merubah, we know the Eibishter always rewards more than he punishes. So Alachas Kama V'Kama, this guy manages only one day in the Bismedish. The Eibishter considers it as at least a year, maybe more.
A year?
Yeah. We describe as Nekas 3 parashas along. There came a point, we know from Parashas Ki Tisa, there was a point when Moshe Rabbeinu placed his tent outside the Machnas of the Chet Ha'Egel. So what happens? V'hoyakom v'vakesh Hashem, anybody who seeks to learn Torah from Hashem has to go mechutz l'machna to Moshe Rabbeinu. That means the furthest anybody needs to walk to Moshe Rabbeinu, if they live at the other end of the Machna, they're walking 3 parashas. That's the 3 parashas over here. This guy has that close.
He's
like Moshe, but he's like one of these Jews who came to learn Torah from Moshe. Even though he's only managing to come to the Beis Medrash maybe once every few months or whatever, but still he has that Maila that he is a Mevakesh Hashem, seeking to come closer to the Eibishter as much as he can. So therefore, according to that, that's describing the mila and the reward of such a person who makes an effort to come learn, even if he can only do it once in a great while. Schalicha, basically, yeah. He doesn't explain that part. So I will tell you, actually, I did see one of the other explanations over here, which I'm not going to say because we're really going a lot slower than I expected to, is that, but one of the explanations actually was that the Yarden, unlike before we were saying the Yarden, the Vilna Gaon's explanation, for example, had the Yarden as the genuine Tamar Chacham, so another way of looking at it is Yarden is Moshe Din. Right. That it means Dinim Koshim that come into the world. So Adadaba, a guy like that, maybe he has the power to stop up such Dinim Koshim. Next. V'omer Rav Baba Chana. V'didi chazili hahi akrukta. I saw this frog, Dehavia ki Akra de Hagrunya. It was the size of Akra de Hagrunya, which is the name of a city. The Akra de Hagrunya Kamehave, and the Gemara interjects, how big is Akra de Hagrunya? Shitin Bati, it has 60 houses in it. So the frog was that size. Osatanina Bola, a snake came and swallowed up the frog. Osapushkanta Ubala Tanina. Then a female raven came and swallowed up the snake. The Solik Yosef Ilana, and this female raven went and perched in a tree. Toch Avi come enough for Shechela de Ilana. Imagine how strong that tree is that could support that kind of weight. Omer Papa Bashmul, Eloi Havoi Hosam Lehemni. If I hadn't been there to see this, I wouldn't have believed it myself.
How big was the bird?
Big enough to be able to swallow a snake that swallowed a frog the size of the city of Akra Dagrunya, which is 60 houses. So we're talking big. it's interesting, by the way, before we get into the explanations, I should mention the Rebbe points out that somebody once asked in a letter to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe answered, it's pointed in the back of Lakut HaSichas, that, what do you mean? What do we mean with Papa Bashmul saying, if I wasn't there, I wouldn't have believed it? Isn't that Malaglik Aldiv HaChamim? You have Haitach and you don't believe something that the HaChamim say? So the Rebbe gave a number of answers. Number one, he's not saying it in a way of Liglug. He's not saying it in a way of making fun of it. Second of all, he's saying that, okay, I wouldn't have believed it's true on the simple level. Sure, if there's Ramazim in it, okay, I wouldn't have believed that such a thing could actually happen in real life. And also, he's saying this in private, unlike that Talmud who was Malag with Aldir Rabbi Yechanan that we'll have later on that was doing it in public. And besides that, the whole thing is meant as a remez anyway, so therefore, not necessarily is there any problem in saying you don't believe it, as opposed to that Talmud who didn't believe what Rabbi Yechanan is saying, where he's talking about something that is actually going to happen in Moshe Mashiach. So now to some explanations. The Ritva says some of this, and the Maharsha expands on this, that the different animals over here represent the different world powers. The frog represents the Greeks. Sfaradeia has the word dea in it, like as in the famous Greek philosophy. So they were as big as 60 houses, representing that Alexander the Great had an empire that spanned the many, many nations, dozens of nations. Eventually, the snake, the Romans, comes and then swallows them up. Eventually, the female raven, which is the Arabs, comes and swallows them up. Why is Yishmael described as a female raven? Because Yishmael has a tzadik kedusha from Avraham Avinu, his father, but he has a tzadik tumah from Hagar, his mother. Therefore, the Arabs can be described as a female raven. So they take over from the Romans, and in particular, they conquer Eretz Yisrael, and they perch in a tree, meaning that they rely on the schutz of Avraham Avinu. As they Eivishta promised Avraham Avinu and Asatib Legoy Gadol, that Yishmael and his descendants, the Arabs, are going to become a great nation, and Kachar. So therefore we're saying, imagine how strong that tree is. Imagine what a tremendous schutz Avraham Avinu had just for Vayita Eishel. They planted a tree and then taught everybody about the Lakus. Look how great that schutz is, that even the Talmudic guys, the Yishmaelim, will come from Avraham. Look how much that schutz stands them in good stead now, 4,000 years later.
But Avram married Sarah, took
her. Again, but he also married Hagar, and Yishmael came.
Hagar.
Yeah.
How can you marry someone in Tumah?
She had some good qualities, but for it, you know, she wasn't Avram and she wasn't Sarah. Look, I mean, you could say the same thing about the Eid of Rav, right? I mean, relative to the Goyim who stayed back in Egypt, they were the better ones, but still, you know, relative to the Jewish people themselves, you know, yeah.
At that point, but in later years, in the future, why shouldn't we be judged favorably?
No, we're not. But the fact of the matter is, he's still relying on the schutz of Avraham Avinu. As a matter of fact, actually, one of the other Mephoshim points out there's a different meaning of the tree as well. Yishmael also had his own story involving a tree. But what happens when he and Hagar are thrown out from he's under a tree, tachas achad asichim, and there he does tshuva. And therefore the Eibishter judges him b'asher l'sham. Look at the power of that tree of representing this tshuva, how much good it stands them in good stead again thousands and thousands of years later. Okay, a couple of other ones. The Vilna Gaon starts out like this. He says the frog represents a Talmud Chacham. Frogs are constantly making noise, and so does a Talmud Chacham is constantly learning. In fact, there's a Zohar that says one reason for Makas, so you can tell this over by your starting. The Zohar says one reason for Makas Tzardeya is because a frog croaks by day and by night, like Vavgisa Boyom Velali, you're supposed to learn Torah day and night. The Mitzrayim were preventing us from that. Therefore, they got punished with frogs that they were hearing the croaking of it day and night.
Oh, they stopped us from learning Torah.
They stopped us from learning Torah, and they're, yeah. Okay. So the frog is a Talmud Chacham. He's the size of 60 houses, meaning that he knows all 60 mesechtes of Shas. And they're in a city, he has Yiras Shemayim, too. It's not just enough to have learning. You have to have the Kav Shel Chumtin. You have to have the Yiras Shemayim to preserve it, just like a city wall protects the houses. What happens, though, the idea of Kav Chumtin comes from Gemara and Shabbos. This explanation that the city represents Yiras Shemayim, that's from the Vilna Gaon. We say a snake comes and swallows, specifically a tanino, we say over here. He explains that a tanin is a specific type of Yetzirah that specifically goes and attacks Talmud Chachamim. So what happens? This guy gets attacked by the snake, by the tanin that tries to get him to give up his learning.
A tanin is a sea snake,
indeed, and that's why it's in the Sea of Torah. It's the kind of snake that swims around in the Sea of Torah and tries to, yeah. So what happens, though? So the Talmud Chacham thinks, you know what, I'm not getting anywhere. What am I going to do as far as Parnassah? Maybe the snake has a point. Maybe I got to leave learning and go find Parnassah. What happens, though? He has to be like a raven. We know, the passage we say every day in davening, Livnei Ode of Asher Yikro, the Eibishter provides for the raven's children, because the ravens themselves don't provide for them. They're cruel to their children. So a person needs to have a certain degree of achzor, not achzorius per se, but a certain degree of that. Like, I'm going to set aside my worries about what's going to be about Parnassah for myself and my family and rely on the Eibishter, like the ravens do. So that the raven comes and swallows up the snake. Then what happens? The Eibishter provides a tree.
So it's
which is
going away.
Yeah. So what happens? Then the Eibishter provides a tree, which is a person who comes to be able to, a zvulun, who comes to support the Yisachar. So therefore, the raven goes and perches in a tree. And so he says, look how strong that tree is. Imagine what strength the person needs, the zvulun needs, to be a zvulun and support Talmud Chachamim like that. And Rav Papa Bar Shmuel says, if I hadn't seen it, I wouldn't have believed it. He says, why? Because he lived in Bavel. In Bavel, we find in the Gemara in Beitza, the rich people were not particularly Bali Tzedakah. So where I come from, I wouldn't believe that there exist such people who are willing to support poor Talmud Chachamim, but they do. Yeah.
Wow, in Bavel they were not big Bali
Tzedakah. There's a Gemara in Beitza that says that the rich people of Bavel, Yoda Gehenim, they're destined to go down there.
But tell me the Republic did see.
So he said, if I hadn't seen it, if I hadn't seen that there is pack of such people, I would have.
Oh,
yeah, there is, but I wouldn't have believed from my previous experience. I never would have believed it. I'll tell one more out of all the other ones I have. I really wish I could tell all of them. If you guys want afterwards, I can put this on a Google Doc and you guys can look it up at your convenience. Some of the notes are a little brief, but I think you can get the gist of it. But okay. Anyway, one of the other ones comes from a mefarish called Sofnas Paneach. Not the one from the Roger Chava. This is a different one. This is from a Leo of Grades.
Oh, okay.
Okay. He says like this. The frog represents regular, like earth science. It has 60 houses because you have many different branches of science. The snake represents like space science, like metaphysics or whatever, like goes beyond regular science. If you know, it's like it includes it. Like a snake surrounds other things. If you know that, then you'll already know the first kind as well.
Snake was medicine.
That's it. Yeah, the Goyim use it as a whatever. The point is, it's some kind of more encompassing science. That, like, if you know that one, you don't even need to start with the basic one. You can know that, and you'll already know the other ones from it. So, on the other hand, they're both swallowed up by the raven. The raven represents Torah. A person learns Torah; they're capable of knowing all the sciences and all the metaphysics and everything that there is in the world. And therefore, Rav Papa Bar Shmuel is a son of Shmuel, the famous Amora, who was an expert. We know from various Gemaras that Shmuel was an expert in astronomy and medicine and various. Where did he get those? Did he go to a school for astronomy? Did he go to a school for medicine? No, he knew it all from Torah. So the Papa says, if I hadn't seen this by my own father, I never would have believed that such a thing could be, that a person could possibly know all these chokmas through Torah alone.
That he said that the raven represents Torah, when we just said that the raven is very cruel and doesn't feed its children.
For one thing, again, because there's the idea that a person needs to have Mesiras Nefesh in order to learn Torah. There's also there are also others. For example, the pasuk the Shoras Ka'ariv is a pasuk in Shir HaShirim that describes the hair of the husband in Shir HaShirim in the mashal over there as black like a raven, and Rashi says it refers to the letters of Torah that are written in black ink. Okay, let's continue. V'amar Rav Abba Chana Zim Nechadu Hava Ka'az Linen B'Sfinta. One time we were traveling on a ship. Bechazin and Hahu Kavra, we saw fish, the Yasvila Achlatina Beursie, a mud eater, which is a kind of little fish, got stuck in its nose, in its nostril. So it suffocated the big fish. It suffocated the big fish, so it died. In fact, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that says that the Eibishter gives examples in the world where a large creature is afraid of a much smaller one. One of them is an example. The Leviathan is afraid of the Kilvis. That's what we're describing over here, that a little tiny fish like that can kill a big cadaver like that. Yeah, by mistake.
Yeah.
What? Titus and the... Well, that was, yeah. That passed at his brain.
Right. Little fish as
Okay, yeah.
We are a little fish.
Okay. Onward. V'idchuhu Maya. So the water pushed it out, because when you have a dead thing in the water, inevitably the waves throw it out onto the seashore. V'shadyuhu l'guda, so they threw it onto the seashore. V'chorov minei shitin mechuzi, 60 cities or 60 regions were destroyed by the fish landing over there. V'ochol minei shitin mechuzi, 60 other cities ate from the fish. U'mochol minei shitin mechuzi, 60 other regions salted away the flesh of the fish to be able to eat for later. From one of its eyes, they filled up 300 barrels of oil.
They were wasting time.
Then when we returned there 12 months later, we saw that they were sawing, they were taking the bones and sawing out of them beams for huts. And they were using those to start rebuilding those 60 destroyed cities. Okay, so Marshall starts by saying like this. The ship is, like we said yesterday, it represents Golos. The fish over here represents Haman. When he, the ship, we said yesterday that we said when we had the ship threatened by the waves is often Golos, and the same thing over here. The ship represents often Golos. The fish over here represents Haman. He has a lot to do with fish, in particular that he wanted to swallow up the Jewish people like a fish. His mazel was Adar, and therefore his girdle landed in Adar. But what happens? A little creature gets into his nose. That's Mordechai. Mordechai thought that Haman thought of Mordechai as a little thing. But Yibed Zainab, he thinks like it's a nothing that I should just harm him. I want to harm all the Jewish people. That'll be a big thing. But it gets into his nose, and. But that caused that Haman got pushed out of the water where he lived. And destroyed. So what happens? 60 cities are destroyed. Our enemies across all the empire that are destroyed under Gimelad over there. It was all called by Haman himself. Yeah, 60 other cities ate from it that we were able to take their spoils as the shlolim lavoyz. In the end, we didn't. Like the pasuk says, "Wabiza lo shalchu es yadam." They didn't take the spoils, but we were able to. So that's considered that we ate from them. We say that we get 300 barrels of oil from one eye. An eye, galgala de'ene, galgala also means like the sphere of mazalos. So he's looking with his eye over the sphere of mazalos, which mazal will be the best one to destroy the Jewish people, and he lands on Adar, but instead we get out of it 300 barrels of oil representing the simcha that we have on Purim, and throughout all of Adar from that. But he doesn't explain 300. Sometimes the Gemara uses 300 as an indefinitely large number. Yes. I saw a different explanation. Also, oil represents the Torah in many places. So it also represents the idea that we accepted the Torah. Kimu v'kiblu. Kimu masha kiblu kvar. So that all that came from that. 12 months later, we're making beams from the bones. It's because of him. Groma means a bone, but it also means because of him that he was the groma. He was the cause of it. We're celebrating every year and rebuilding what he wanted to destroy.
So that's something.
I don't think Marsha explained the salting, unless maybe I missed that when I was going through it. I don't know.
That was part of.
I think it was that we salted it away, that we preserved the memory of it for every year. I don't remember actually. Yeah. Okay.
Bruce. Just Bruce.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. Here's another explanation. Here's another explanation. This one comes from Olus Ephraim, which is a sefer of Droshus by the Kliyot. He says the ship represents a person going through the world, which is very stormy, very, very, very dangerous, very potentially dangerous for the neshama. There's a fish swimming in that sea, which is tzaddik. But what happens? A little fish gets into his nose and kills him. Even a great tzaddik sometimes makes a little mistake, like Moshe Rabbeinu, for example, and he ends up dying. So what happens then? So what happens? There's three different kinds of people's reactions to what happens when a tzaddik dies. One group of people figures, okay, well, then that's it. You know, there's nothing to do with the world anymore. In that case, forget about it. The world is a goner. We may as well just withdraw from it. They're like the cities who are destroyed. Then you have a second group goes to the opposite extreme. They say, look, you know, if tzaddikim die also, if everybody dies the same way, what's the point of being a tzaddik? What's the point of Torah and mitzvahs? Eat, drink, and be merry. That's the 60 cities that ate.
The first one says what?
The first one says, forget it. Let's not deal with the world anymore. We'll withdraw from the world. We'll have nothing to do with it. They were the 60 cities that are destroyed.
And on Torah, or just...
Maybe Fakifzich and Torah, but maybe even not. Whatever. Like, we can't live normal lives anymore. Like, they're devastated by it. Yeah, close enough, Hashem. The other group says, we'll just eat, drink, and be married. The third group realizes that, no, we have a brief melacha olam, we have an eternal covenant of salt with the Eibishta over the Torah. We need to salt away. We need to recommit ourselves to Torah and realize that matan schar, that the matan schar is salted away, is saved away for the future. For the Asid love it. So they look at it with one eye. They realize that the Eibishta looks hine ein Hashem, that the Eibishta looks at the world with his eye and controls everything. They get out of it. We get out of it 300 barrels of oil. So again, Olo Sefraim explains in each of these things, 300, he said, we had this yesterday as well, that it represents Torah Avodah, the Shlemos of Torah Avodah and Gmilus Chasadim. The Shlemos of Torah of Avodah and Gmilus Chasadim can be represented by the number 300. So the 300 barrels of oil is the reward for a person who has Shlemos in these three things, the reward that's saved away, lost in love for people.
Three being what?
100 for Torah, 100 for Avodah, 100 for Gmilus Chasadim. Meanwhile, 12 months later, eventually they rebuild the cities from the bones, representing Tchias HaMeisim, that eventually the body of the tzaddik is rebuilt from the one bone, from the luz, and put back together. Maybe, I don't know.
Sorry.
It's true, yeah.
So what's
One other one, again, out of the various ones that I picked over here, is the, in a similar way, this comes from one of the ones called Dauche Noyam. I mean, he has an interesting, this one actually he gives, for each one of the stories, he gives an explanation. He has Pshat, which is the Rashbam over here, Remen and Drush and Sod. Most of them are far too hard to follow, but here's one that I figured I could excerpt.
Dauche Noyam?
Dauche Noyam is the name of the Sefer, yeah. So he says that, again, we're talking about it specifically Moshe Rabbeinu and a little mistake that led by Mei Meriva, that led to him having to die in the Midbar. So that pushed him out of, just like we say in the story, the water pushed out the fish. He was pushed out of going into Eretz Yisrael proper and lands on the bank, meaning an Eber Ayadim. What happens? The Gemara tells us in Tmura that during the 30 days of mourning after Moshe Rabbeinu was Nifter, the Yidden forgot thousands of halachas. So that's represented by the 60 cities destroyed, that the 600,000 Jews were destroyed and devastated by the loss of all these halachas that they forgot. On the other hand, 60 cities ate from it, because we know the Dura Midbar has a great advantage from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was with them in the Midbar. We all know the famous Medrash. We have the song amongst majestic mountains that Moshe Rabbeinu has to be with the Dura Midbar to lead them back, to lead them Limos HaMashiach. So therefore, they eat from it, they gain from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was with them. So the ones who are alive when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away are the ones who lost out, they're the ones who forgot Halach. The ones who passed away in the Midbar are the ones that eat from it, they're the ones that gain that Moshe Rabbeinu was with them in Eber HaYagim. The 60 cities that salted it away represents that you have a special of the Moshe called Dor HaVador. You have a spark of Moshe in every generation. Yeah.
60 generations?
No, and 60 meaning an indefinitely large number. But in other words, like we have, in every generation, there's sparks of there's a spashtus of Moshe. There's a Tzadik Hader who's...
We said 300 is a large number.
Sometimes the Gemara also uses 60 as a large number. There's different... So maybe also, since we have 60 for the one and 60 for the other, so we have, okay, in every generation, the 600,000 main neshamas of that generation have a nitzot of Moshe Rabbeinu. So eventually what happens, we're saying that they took the bones and sawed them to make beams. That refers to the fact, eventually, the Gemara tells us over there that Osniel ben Knaz, who ended up being the next Shofet after Yeshua, was able to reconstruct all those lost halachas based on Kal Vachomer and Pilpul and Zeta Shavas and whatever. So therefore, it's like you're taking what you have, you're taking, so to speak, the skeleton of the fish and then carving it and grinding it down into sawdust as need be in order to be able to reconstruct what you lost.
You have to destroy to rebuild?
Not destroy to rebuild, but in other words, the point is you grind the halacha very finely, you analyze it very, very finely in order to be able to, in great detail, in order to be able to rebuild from it, in order to be able to reconstruct from it what's missing. What about the oil? Okay, so he says over there that it represents the idea that there's two, Moshe Rabbeinu had, there's Nigla of Torah and there's Nister. So we know, on the one hand, like Kosta Enu, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't lose his abilities in Nigla before he passed away. On the other hand, we say Nistachma Memena minus a Chokma. That's before he passed away, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ochaloi Lotis Velave, I can't go in and out anymore. What does it mean? Rashi says on the Pasuk there in Vayelech. It means that the wellsprings of Chokma are closed up to him because they're given over to Yeshua. So in that sense, like now he only has one eye. What happens though? That same Gemara in Tmura tells us how did it come about that the Jewish people lost all those halachas? How you talking? They didn't learn Moshe. Yeshua didn't learn them from Moshe while he was alive. What happens is the Gemara tells over there that before Moshe passed away, he says to Yeshua, "This is your last chance. If you want to ask me anything, ask." Yeshua tells him, Moshe Rabbeinu, "Come on, I've been your Talmud for 40 years. You don't think I've learned everything I could by now?" And for that, it ended up that Takahi forgot these things. So therefore, in that sense, a lot of oil was taken out of one. A lot of oil of Torah was taken out of the one eye. That, in the sense that so much was lost because Yeshua. It's something else. That same thing, Stachim and Amayin Sachokma, means that we have in that Gemara over there. It's in that Rashi over there. It's actually also Gemara. Someplace, I don't remember where now, that Yeshua is teaching now that he's the leader. That Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Eibishter, you know what, don't make me pass away, let me go into Eretz Yisrael. The Eibishter tells him it's Yeshua's time to be the leader. Moshe says, okay, well, how about fine, let Yeshua be the Rebbe, I'll be the Talmud. The Eibishter tells him, you're not going to be able to hack it. What happens? Yeshua is sitting there and darshaning, and Moshe Rabbeinu can't even understand what he's saying, because Yeshua is teaching on a level that Moshe Rabbeinu is not familiar with. As a lawyer. No, lower, but still lower. Something that Moshe Rabbeinu can't understand it taught on that level. He understands it on his own level. Every person understands on their own level. So therefore, in that sense,
one
you have like
a high level, you understand
not, sometimes you can have such a lower level that's like not your language. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Eibishter, forget it. You're right. I can't manage anymore. So that's a lot of oil was taken out of the one eye that Moshe Rabbeinu lost. And the Stachim and Amayin Sachokma, a lot of oil goes to Yeshua, but Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have access to it anymore. The oil represents Torah, then. Yeah. Specifically, it represents Pnimius HaTorah, which is compared in many places to the story. Okay.
All right.
To be continued, guys.
Yeah.